Good morning. My name is Leslie Keller, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. At this time, I would like to welcome you to the conference call on report on economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the fourth quarter of 2020. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to make a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Iván Cajeme Villarreal Camero, Chief Economist of the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, and José de Luna Martínez, Head of the Public Debt Unit of the Ministry of Finance and Public Credit, to proceed with the remarks. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for attending this phone call, and I hope you're all doing well. I hope you and your loved ones are doing well. I'm going to start by giving you a broad picture of what happened in 2020 regarding the economic situation, economic activity, and the public finances. And then my colleague, Jose, is going to talk about the public debt in 2020. I'm also going to talk to you a little bit about how we're seeing things in 2021 as of now. Starting with the economic activity, just last week, as you know, we had a preliminary estimation coming from INEGI for the GDP in the fourth quarter of 2020 and also for the whole year. For the whole year, which is the one particularly important for us because of our estimations for that impact public finances, INEGI reported a year-on-year contraction of 8.3, non-seasonal adjust, which is pretty similar to the one we used in our estimations back when we presented the economic package for 2021 in September 8th. As you remember, we used minus 8% for our estimate. So it's pretty close, and it provides some confidence on not only for estimations for 2020, but also for our estimations for 2021, how we're going to see things this year, and also how we're going to see revenues behaving. Actually, I'm going to talk a little bit about revenues, but they behaved even better than we expected in 2020. Now, we also saw a recovery continuing from the third quarter. The GDP, total GDP grew 3.1%. We saw a slight contraction in the GDP in the primary sector, but both tertiary and secondary sector grew above 3% in real terms. The economic recovery just in general has been led by the less contact intensive sectors, as you know, and this is something that we're seeing all over the world. It is just, we talked about this back when we presented the economic package, that we expected precisely these, the sectors that were going to be able to continue operating using some safety measures, to minimize health risks, were going to recover faster than those that depend more on the social interaction among people. So we were going to see those recovering faster. That's exactly what we're seeing. So the secondary sector grew above 27% between the second and the fourth quarter in 2020. The primary sector, even which depends even less on contact among people, even grew. And also it was impacted by a higher demand, of course, even grew 2% in 2020. And that has helped to have a recovery in jobs, which in turn has helped also maintain consumption levels. The jobs we have as of December 2020, 9.5 million jobs have been recovered out of the 12.5 million that were laid off during April, the lockdown, and that's around 77% of those jobs. So saying that has helped private consumption, It has grown around 18% from the minimum reached in May up until October, which was the last data available. And the consumption has also been helped, of course, by extraordinary remittances, as you know very well, but also by the increases in wages, something that we didn't see, for example, into the crisis of 2019. This year, we have seen an increase in wages, informal wages, and total wages in general. And part of it, of course, has to do with a composition effect, but also part of it has been boosted by the policy of increasing the minimum wage, which was 20% in nominal terms in 2020. In financial markets, in prices, we have also seen, we also saw at the end of the year better behavior than we had seen in middle of the year. So inflation, for example, closed at 3.15% year on year in December. We had seen in August, September, October, some temporary increases, particularly in the price of fruits, vegetables, and processed foods. But that effect disappeared, that waned, and so the inflation ended up at very close to the central bank's objective. We also saw an appreciation of the peso. The peso at the end of the year was, the exchange rate compared to the dollar at the end of the year was 19.95 pesos per dollar, which meant an appreciation of 27.3% versus the maximum reached in March. That's very important because it helped decrease the net debt at the end of the year. As I told you, we talked about this before. The effect of that, the net effect of the fall in the exchange rate is higher in the debt than any surplus coming from the bank, central bank, that we could have received. So that helped. This was a question that we kept getting. We keep getting about the Banxico's central. I'm sorry, Banxico's surplus. We don't expect a very high surplus this year, but that's it's just because of this appreciation of the peso that we saw at the end of the year, which reduced debt even more. So that was good news, definitely. The stock exchange ended up increasing a little bit in 2020. We have seen a sharp decrease of above 24% in around March. But then it recovered steadily, as we saw in the world, rest of the world, and ended up above 2019 levels in 1.2%. We also saw a reduction in risk premia. For example, the CDS for 5 years reduced 229 basis points at the end of 2020 versus the maximum it reached in March, April. For the financial system, it remains pretty robust and preserves its liquidity. The capitalization levels are close to 7 percentage points above the requirements of Basel III, which is 10.5. So it is pretty solid. And non-conforming loans, the rate is 2.3%, which is very reasonable, lower than what we saw in previous crisis, and manageable for banks. We're not out of the woods yet. Of course, the economy continues recovering. There are still risks to the downside for many businesses and risks for the financial system. But we are monitoring them and keeping a very close eye, so we take measures on time. Now I'm going to move to the public finances for 2020, the results. As you know, we mentioned time and time again, it was a pretty delicate balancing act, this of maintaining the economy, providing support for businesses and households, providing support for the health system, and also not incurring in additional debt. We thought the latter was important for the future. We think it is important for the future to keep debt in a sustainable path. because otherwise it will just represent higher costs in the future, less resources for programs and for infrastructure projects, or other painful measures that we have taken in the past. We know very well what the hell led us to even they have deepened some recessions, for example, and we didn't want that. So that was the general policy, and in the end, we saw better figures than the ones we expected, than the ones we presented, for example, in the economic package in 2021, and also in our third quarter report. So regarding, I'm going to start with tax revenues, which, as you know very well, they showed an outstanding performance given the context and given what we had experienced both in 1995, for example, in 2009. In 2020, these tax revenues increased 0.8% in real terms compared to 2019. If the drop had been similar, if the elasticity, I mean, of tax revenues to GDP had been similar to that of 1995, then income tax will have dropped close to 30% in real terms in 2020. If the elasticity had been similar to that of 2009, then income tax will have dropped 24% in real terms last year. They didn't. They increased 0.8%. It was very important. It helped fund the programs and the projects that help keep economic activity moving, and also build up the health system, which was one of our priorities for last year and for this year as well, to provide care for anyone who needs it. And also helped in the end to decrease the public sector borrowing requirements compared to the figure that we had estimated back in September. I'm going to talk a little bit later. So this increase we have said it before, but I think it's important to stress it out. It is important because it comes from changes that we made through 2019 and also 2020 to reduce evasion, to fight tax fraud, to reduce some fiscal expenses that were clearly regressive and inefficient, and some other measures. These changes to the legal framework without increasing taxes or creating new taxes, which is something that we saw in previous crises and only exacerbated those crises. These changes have strengthened this type of revenues, and we estimate we're going to continue seeing that improvement over the next years. Sandra Secretaria, for example, has mentioned we estimate that around 3.5% of GDP is lost in revenues due to evasion. So there's a huge opportunity there to take those revenues without having to increase taxes. Some of those changes, for example, were the elimination of universal compensation, the taxation to the digital economy, which was just, they just had to do it before. It's not like a new tax or anything. They just weren't paying the taxes they were supposed to pay, like any other business. Administrative easings for compliance, and of course, the inspection and verification programs focused on large taxpayers, which have been very successful in increasing risk perception. The high revenues for 2020, higher than expected revenues for 2020, are going to be a higher base for the revenues in 2021. So that's something that we're going to have to look at during this year. Now, for spending, someone asked me the third quarter report, if we weren't gonna overspend, but in excess, in a way that we increased deficit a lot at the end. And I told you back then that it is normal to see an increased spending in the last months of the year. But we were gonna maintain our fiscal indicators, And that's what we did. You can see, especially the ministries and the agencies that bear most of the burden of fighting this pandemic in terms of health and in terms of the economic situation, they increased the spending that they did was around 180 billion higher than the one was programmed for the year, which shows that part of the measures that we took to fight the pandemic. So, for example, we had an increase in physical investment of 11.9% in real terms last year. Also, health increased 8.7% in real terms, and the Ministry of Health in particular spent more than 25 billion pesos in addition to what it was programmed for the ministry. For social development, spending increased 3.7%. And part of this increased spending in these key functions came from a reduction in operating spending, different from salaries and other types of those payments, a reduction in operating spending of 9.9% in real terms. I've seen in the media or in some websites criticism because of the decrease, the austerity measures. It was more, and this, I want to leave this very clear, it was more a redirection of spending from some items to others, the key priorities, than a reduction per se. As I've said before, expenditure actually increased during 2020. Now, all of that led us to a public deficit of 2.9% of GDP, same as we estimated back in September last year when we presented the economic package. The public sector borrowing requirements decreased a little bit compared to what we had estimated back then. It was 3.9% of GDP instead of 4.7%, which was our previous estimate. And it comes from, as I was saying, the surprise in tax revenues that we saw, which helped to cover for a lower than expected oil revenues. But also, we didn't have to use as many financial assets as we thought we were going to use to cover for spending, thanks to this surprise. And also, we saw some other lower requirements in terms of PIREGAS, for example, and for the EPAP, which all of them combined helped to reduce the PSBR. And that combined to the improvement in exchange rates that I was mentioning before led to a figure for the historical balance of the PSBR of 52.2% at the end of 2020, which was 2.5 points lower than the one we estimated in September last year. We were estimating 54.7%. Even in our third report, we were estimating a little bit higher than 54.8, but in the end, it was lower. And this will help us over the following years. We have already reached the figure that we thought we were going to, well, it was actually a little bit higher by the end of the administration. It is lower. And over the next years, we will continue to reduce the debt. It's important to mention, very important, that as opposed to what happened in some other years, the ratio, for example, of the financial cost to tax revenues or from the net debt to tax revenues did not increase significantly. So, for example, back in 1995, what happened was that the ratio of net debt to income taxes went up from 3.7 to 5.4, very significant. Whereas in the 2008-2009 crisis, the ratio went up from 3.3 to 4.1 in between 2007 and 2008, and then it went a little bit down in 2009. But still, it was at the ratio was 3.9. Now, according to our estimates for the fourth quarter, the ratio went up from 3.4. So it was lower than any of the other years before or after the crisis, to 3.6, very manageable and for the future. Whereas the financial cost as percentage of income taxes, also a completely different story from the one we saw in those crises. So between 1994 and 1995, financial costs went up from 21% to 50%. Tremendous increase that had to and brought the increase in this VAT, for example, and other painful measures that only deepened the recession. In the 2008 crisis, the ratio didn't increase that much, but it was higher than the one we are seeing now. So the ratio was between 24-23%. And now, this in 2020, the ratio remained flat compared to 2019, pretty much flat compared to 2018. The ratio has been 21% of financial cost to tax revenues. For 2021, we were estimating more or less the same ratio with the figures from the economic package. But since we're probably going to see higher tax revenues because of the higher base for 2020 and lower financial costs because it already decreased last year, our estimate in the end was the final figure was around 31 billion pesos lower than our initial estimate, then the ratio is probably going to go down as well, just adding to this sustainability of the debt path. I'm going to stop here and leave the floor to my colleague. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and good morning to everyone. The year 2020 posed various challenges in the management of public debt. Starting March 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic triggered periods of volatility and lack of liquidity in the financial markets. Around the months of June and July, we witnessed a normalization of conditions in financial markets, and in the subsequent months, we have seen a rally in all financial markets. Given this situation, the public debt policy responded in a proactive and flexible manner. The actions taken during this period made possible to preserve the stability of the local debt market and maintain access to the different sources of external financing. The federal government's financial needs were covered in a timely manner throughout the year, preserving a solid structure of the debt portfolio. In this context, I will talk now about the main actions in the management of the domestic and foreign debt, which are described in the report. Regarding the management of domestic debt during 2020, the government securities auction calendars were adjusted in response to the prevailing market conditions. In addition, a flexible and proactive strategy of liability management operations was implemented to either provide liquidity to the local debt market or to improve the maturity profile, reducing the refinancing risk. In March 2020, three reverse exchange transactions were carried out for an amount of 130 billion pesos. In these transactions, long-term securities were taken out and short-term securities such as CETES and Bondes D were delivered with the objective of providing liquidity and promoting the proper functioning of the local debt market. In April and May, for the first time, two exchange transactions for market makers were carried out for an amount of 21 billion pesos. In addition, throughout 2020, another set of five liability management transactions were carried out with bond and Udibonos exchanges or cross exchanges for an amount of more than 200 billion pesos. The main objective of these operations was to improve the maturity profile and reduce the risk of refinancing. Let me now talk about the foreign debt market. Talking about foreign debt management, during 2020, various financing and liability management operations were carried out, which allow us to significantly reduce the risk of refinancing. In 2020, five operations were conducted in international markets. These operations were characterized by a favorable financing conditions and the positive impact in the maturity profile of the debt portfolios. Specifically, in January 2020, the federal government placed $2.3 billion and 1.75 billion euros in two separate transactions. In April, a financing operation was made by an amount of $6 billion, while in September, a 750 million euros bond was issued. Finally, on November 16, we carried out a refinancing operation of more than $6.6 billion. It's important to mention that the operations carried out in January and November included a liability management component in which bonds maturing in the short term were exchanged and or paid in advance. Among the placements made in 2020, it's important to mention the financing operation carried out in September, where the federal government issued the first sustainable sovereign bond linked to the Sustainable Development Goals promoted by the United Nations, and this was an operation of an amount of 750 million euros. The operation reached a demand equivalent to 6.4 times the amount placed and represented a milestone in the development and innovation of market instruments for sustainable finance. Additionally, it's important to acknowledge the actions carried out during this year, 2021, with respect to external debt. On January 4, 2021, Mexico issued the first bond listed in the Taipei Stock Exchange and in the Luxembourg Stock Exchange. The main objective of this operation was to diversify the investor base and access new markets. A new 50-year benchmark bond with maturity in 2071 was placed. It was issued for an amount of $3 billion. And on January 15, the federal government concluded a refinancing transaction in euros, which consisted of three parts. The first operation included the issuance of two new benchmark bonds in euros, one for 12 years for an amount of $1 billion and another for 30 years for an amount of 800 million euros. In the second operation, the resources of the new bonds were used to execute an early maturity clause of an issue due in April 2023. This strategy allowed the cancellation of 36% of scheduled foreign debt repayments for 2023. In the third part of the transaction, a liability management exercise was carried out in which global investors were able to exchange shorter-term positions for the new longer-term references through two baskets of instruments. Last December, the Ministry of Finance presented the annual borrowing plan for 2021. As every year, the plan highlights the main elements of the public debt policy of the federal government and of the entities that are recurring issuers of the public sector. For 2021, the public debt policy will continue with a strict and transparent management of public liabilities in order to guarantee the sustainability of the debt in the long term and to cover the financing needs of the federal government at the lowest possible cost, maintaining a low level of risk and an efficient liquidity management. During 2021, the government securities auction program will maintain the necessary flexibility to adapt to prevailing market conditions. The possibility of holding syndicated auctions to introduce new references will be analyzed subject to market conditions. Also, the reopening of current emissions will be evaluated. In order to meet the demand for government securities, the convenience of new bond issues with maturities and coupon cuts on different dates than June and December will be analyzed. As part of the strategy for 2021, the execution of liability management operations is also considered. In addition, the internal debt strategy will continue to strengthen the figure of market makers in order to encourage liquidity in the local bond market. In order to promote the healthy development of the financial system, the federal government will analyze the feasibility of implementing new reference rates that reflect market conditions for operations with government securities. With regard to the foreign debt strategy, the federal government will maintain its role as a recurrent issuer in international financial markets. Foreign debt will be used in a complementary manner only when favorable conditions can be obtained. We will continue to monitor the evolution of the main international markets in order to detect financing opportunities under competitive conditions. Finally, taking into account the possibility of facing adverse macroeconomic scenarios, the federal government will maintain a flexible external debt strategy that allows it to adapt to such unforeseen events, seeking at all times to guarantee the soundness of the country's public finances. Finally, let me comment on the debt levels for the end of the year 2020. In the fourth quarter of 2020, the historical balance of the public sector borrowing requirements stood at 52.2% of GDP, higher by 7.7 percentage points than the observed levels at the end of 2019. With respect to public sector's net debt, which includes the net debt of the federal government, the state-owned enterprises, and development banks, this figure was 52.4% of GDP at the end of the fourth quarter of 2020. The domestic share of this net debt stood at 33.3% of GDP, and the external share amounted to 19.1% of GDP. As of the fourth quarter of 2020, the federal government's debt portfolio preserves low risk indicators. The currency risk remains low, with 76.4% of the federal government's net debt being denominated in domestic currency. Additionally, refinancing risk maintains a low level, since the average maturity of foreign market debt is 19.8 years and the average maturity of domestic market debt is 7.5 years. Lastly, interest rate risk is also limited, with 80.7% of domestic market debt held at long term and at fixed rates, while 100% of the external market debt is at a fixed rate. I thank you for your attention, and we will now proceed to the questions. My colleague Tajeme will continue.
Thank you, Jose. Now, I just want to talk briefly about, just before proceeding to the questions, just about what we, how we're seeing things for 2021 as of now. First of all, our growth estimate, as you know very well, we have a growth estimate for this year of 4.6%. We have not updated that. We're going to see if it needs any updating in when we publish our preliminary guidelines at the beginning of April. That estimate, we think it's very responsible. Estimates from other institutions, both private and, for example, international organisms, have been converging to ours. IMF, for example, estimates now a growth of 4.3%, pretty similar to our estimation. And as we mentioned, it is half of the contraction in our that we saw in 2020. So it is very prudent from our point of view. Back in 1996, we saw a rebound that was actually higher than the contraction experienced in 1995. The rebound was 6.8% compared to the contraction of 6.3%. In 2009, the rebound was pretty similar, of 5.1% compared to contraction of 5.3%. So this rebound of 4.6 is very responsible. It is based on the things that we have been working on as administration since the beginning. So, for example, the ratification and the entry into force of the USMCA last year, that's going to help boost our relationship, our commercial relationship with the U.S. It is very important. It is very deep. It is stronger than and last, you know, will last longer than what any administration will last. The USMCA will only help boost it. So that's one thing. It will also help, we believe, to reinforce nearshoring strategies that have been becoming more and more important with the strained relationship between the U.S. and China. We believe that's a structural change, that's going to help improve investment in Mexico to take advantage of the new agreement. Our estimation also comes from our expectations of investment infrastructure this year, both from public investment, which is expected to increase 8%, and from private investment. As you know, so far we have worked with the private sector in announcing and implementing two packages of investment in projects, 68 projects that amount to 2.3% of GDP. That's going to continue. The investment unit here at the Ministry of Finance is working with the private sector in identifying more projects to make them a reality, and that's also going to help. Also helping or behind our estimates is the deepening of the financial system. This year we have to work, for example, on the implementation of the pension reform that took place last year. That's expected to increase savings from 18% to 40% of GDP in 2029. There's work that we have to do, and we have done more work in previous years, such as, for example, increasing the benefits of the financial system to young people, expanding the net for expanding financial inclusion. People who receive all these programs from the government, they are not getting it through electronic transfers. That's going to continue. The recent lockdown, of course, creates some risks, and it has been extended recently, but we believe it is going to have a more limited impact than the one we saw back in April and May. It is more limited in terms of time. Back then it was 2 months, now it's some weeks. In terms of states also, and in terms even of activities, back then in the lockdown of April and May, some activities, we knew less than we know now about COVID. So, for example, mining and the auto manufacturing industry and the construction as well were closed back then. Now we know it is with some measures such as use of face masks and other some distance, etc., can take place with some safety. So they remain open now. And even other activities that we deemed as very risky back then, now we know it is safer to for them to take place with some measures. So the impact is going to be lower, maybe 2 to 3%. In January compared to no restrictions, but still it's something that we have to take into account. Some upside risks that the 4.6 estimation did not take into account were the vaccination efforts. We didn't include that at all. So any progress that we make on that regard will mean an increase in the economic activity. And we have worked very hard, as you know very well, since last year in making sure that Mexico has vaccines applied this year. We already started, actually. So we pre-purchased some contracts with Pfizer, CanSino, AstraZeneca, and the COVAX initiative for using 32 billion pesos, and we have more in reserve to use them as needed. That's one of the vaccination is one of the priorities, of course. So we're already making arrangements to get the Sputnik V vaccine. Today you probably read some good news coming from the Lancet regarding that vaccine. 92%, if I remember correctly, effectiveness in its phase 3 trials. So those are good news, and we're purchasing around 24 billion doses of those that will help inoculate 12 million people. Two doses are needed. So that's the difference. And for the public finances, I already mentioned the surprise in tax revenues in 2020 that will help tax revenues as well in 2021. Actually, some preliminary data for January shows higher than expected revenues. I'm going to ask you to wait until the official report at the end of this month, but we're already seeing that. We're also seeing a higher oil price than the one we used for our forecast. We used $42.1 per barrel, whereas the average in January has been around 51. So that's also good news. Of course, the oil market is an unpredictable one, and we don't want to get our hopes too high, but it seems like it has stabilized, and it will continue that way the rest of the year. And what you for sure can expect is our commitment to fiscal responsibility, the one that we have shown that it resulted in the reaffirmation of the credit ratings by Fitch and by S&P Global, and also the renewal of IMF's flexible credit line for $64 billion for this year. Now we can proceed to questions, and I thank you again for your attention.